welcome to another episode of I Could Talk Kayfabe. I'm Joe.
I'm Sean.
And here we have, actually, before we start this book, which is looks like a nice book, as of recording...
We definitely haven't done this one, right?
No, we haven't.
Okay.
As of recording, I just wanted to say the NES Classic just came back into the market, and I was able to snag one the day it came out. I went right over to Best Buy at 10 o'clock, and I got it. There was no line. There was nothing. There was no hubbub. And I'm really disappointed in it.
Well, what did you expect?
I was expecting... I don't know why I thought the emulation would be better, because Nintendo made it, and it's Nintendo's games. But the emulation's no better than what I get on a Raspberry Pi.
Well, okay, so I'm sorry to interrupt, but by the way, I'm Joe. I'm Sean. That's Joe. Did we say our names?
Yeah, I said I'm Joe.
Oh, that's right. I did.
Yeah.
Well, forget I said that. So, in regards to the emulation,
yeah.
What's the difference?
No,
I mean, granted, you play a lot more video games.
Yeah.
You've done this a lot more than I have.
I have
an NES Classic, and I played Simon's Quest and did everything I wanted to do with it just fine. So
I noticed there's an input lag when I'm playing Punch-Out, and when you have a lag, a game like Simon's Quest, it might not be as dramatic, but when you play Punch-Out and it requires precise timing, even Glass Joe's hitting me. And like, that just never happens on a real Nintendo. The sound effects are off, and I need the sound effects to be 100% there in order to get the timing down in a game like Punch-Out, and that's bad. And then I was playing Super Mario 3, and you could see on the right of the screen, like the color kind of comes in and out. It's really bad. Mm-hmm. So I was very disappointed in the NES Classic Edition, and I'm not happy.
Do you think, because you and I have been talking about this, we got to... Because you can do stuff with it.
Yeah, that'll be nice. It'll be cool to hack it. We'll figure that out eventually. We'll have all the games on there. But I thought this was my intention with this device. I was going to put all the games on there and then sell all my carts, get rid of them, be done. Trying to cut down on clutter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm going to do that now.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's... I mean, it's a preference to a lot of people that, you know, you have that. You want to have that option to play the original cards and stuff, but obviously that's much more expensive to do. I don't know. I'm pretty happy with it. I haven't played it that much because once we got the Retrocade, basically playing a lot of those things. However, I cannot find a decent controller for that fucking thing.
Yeah, you're...
And I don't know if I'm... I guess I'm not the only one, but I feel like... Because I got the two controllers that came with it, and, like, you know, I like to play shooters. I like to play things that I have to press a button a lot. You know, that's what I'm doing. And the buttons are busted on the controllers I bought. I bought a Dogbone, like, SNES kind of thing that was probably, like, with some of the highest recommendations that I think you pointed out to me. And I don't know if I just have dense fingers or something, because for some reason that one's not doing as well either.
I tend to find that all the USB clone controllers that are based on like Nintendo stuff are all crap.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, because it's basically just a mock-up of it. But unfortunately, that's what it uses.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, so I'm trying to figure out what exactly, how exactly to scratch that itch without having to, you know, deal with inferior quality.
It's funny, when I was playing emulation on my laptop, I was using a Gravis pad that I found, like one of those old Gravis pads from like the, probably like the mid 2000s. I found it at a Goodwill for 99 cents, and it works beautifully on a laptop. So I have to imagine it would work on the Super Retrocade. I don't know. I haven't tried it yet.
Maybe we should try that.
Yeah.
I've heard a bunch of things. I've heard that you can get PlayStation 3 controllers to work. I haven't been able to do that yet.
The PlayStation 3 works. Those controllers work beautifully on a Raspberry Pi.
Right.
That being said, playing Punch-Out again, there's a delay when you're using the PS3 controller. And So yeah, so I'm very disappointed with the emulator. I just don't know. I figured Nintendo's product would be, their emulation would be, because like if you played the games on the Wii Virtual Console, the emulation was better on that, and on the Wii U Virtual Console. So I thought it would be on par with what they had on those devices. But no, it's no better than a Raspberry Pi.
Mm.
I'm sad.
Well, on that bummer of a note, let's take a break.
We'll take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about Wrestling Superstars from the publishers of Pro Wrestling Illustrated from August of 1990.
Hey, I'm Jen.
And I'm Sean. We're here to tell you about our podcast, Worst Collection Ever.
And this is the show where we tell you about the worst comic book collection in existence, and it just happens to belong to us.
We have some of the worst comics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're bad. They're not worth anything.
No good.
Why do we own them? I own a number of issues of Terror Inc. and Guy Gardner.
Basically, we go around to local comic book stores and we buy everything we can out of dollar boxes.
We tell you about the weird stuff in them. We tell you about stuff that's related to them. We go into tangents and we're very uninformed. So,
oh my God, totally. But totally check out our podcast because you'll hear us just talk and joke about Marvel books and DC books from God only knows when.
That's right. It's our show, Worst Collection Ever, every Tuesday on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Download, rate, subscribe, tell a friend.
It'll be good and terrible, but good.
And we're back. Wrestling Superstars from the Pro Wrestling, from the publishers of Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Right.
August 1990.
Yeah, and so we're in the middle of the Dream Match era of Wrestling Superstars. Well, pretty much that's all they did.
Yeah.
And
it's fan fiction for wrestling.
Uh-huh, yeah. Wrestling Superstar Dream Match, Ultimate Warrior versus Ric Flair. I feel like, did we ever actually get this match? I think we did. We had to have gotten this match at some point, at least in 92. I'm pretty certain we did.
I know in 92, so you had Savage and Warrior wrestling for the belt at SummerSlam, and then Ric Flair got involved in that match.
Right.
And then it was him and Razor Ramon, they were kind of like hanging out together. But then Warrior left because some kind of steroid thing. He was on some doctor's list that was being indicted, and he was, so whatever. Warrior was gone. So Kurt Hennig took his place at Survivor Series.
Yeah.
So I don't think we ever saw the Warrior face Ric Flair.
I feel like there might have been a point, though, before him leaving and sometime around that whole rigmarole in 92, you know, with the SummerSlam, that they had to have faced off at some point and it was recorded. I know, I just feel like there was something where, definitely it happened, but I'm surprised you don't see that promote. I feel like I haven't, it's not really a thing that you're made aware of.
Yeah.
You're aware of, so. But nonetheless, they are battling here. We also have after WrestleMania 7, or sorry, after WrestleMania 6 loss, after the WrestleMania 6 loss, where does Hulk Hogan go from here? And it's a sad picture of Terry up in the corner.
He's sad.
He's very sad. And then down below, these men can't be, wrestling beware, these men cannot be trusted. The Hart Foundation, Lex Luger, Norman, Jake Roberts, Mike Rotundo, who can you trust if you can't trust Mike Rotundo? Eric Embry, the Rock and Roll Express, Big Boss Man, Roddy Piper, and John Nord.
It's kind of weird that Roddy Piper's name is thrown in there because he was a fan favorite by this time.
Well, Rock and Roll Express is
oh yeah, Rock and Roll Express.
This,
yeah.
This is you know, they were sort of heels, I think, in the Continental around this time, because they eventually were back in WCW, and then Rick Robert got hurt and all that. So, but let's okay. So I did go through this one at some point. So let's just kind of go through some of the big notes here. Fan forum, talk about Hulk Hogan, Lex Luger dream match. Man, when that happened, that wasn't that great.
Well, it was cool in a sense when Hogan was NWO and Lex Luger won the title on that episode of Nitro the week before Road Wild. That was kind of a cool moment.
That was probably the most emotionally entertaining one. But
that being said, yeah, it was kind of a letdown. I mean, what would you expect having those two guys wrestle each other?
I know. It was like, it's it was
without just... Pat Patterson to go through the match with them beforehand.
Lex Luger is not that good.
No, no, he wasn't.
And I've always, I mean, there's some matches where he can be carried to a good match, but he's just not that great.
Yeah, his good matches were against guys who could actually work, like Ric Flair, Sting, Kurt Hennig. He had some good matches, mm-hmm. but then, like, you know, then he had matches like against Hulk Hogan that were just whatever.
Superstar Grapevine, the big news happening out of Portland, Oregon. Is Billy Jack Haynes is now a rule breaker.
No!
He is healing it up because in a match between Billy Jack, Rip Oliver, and Larry Oliver, they're taking on the grappler, Brian Adams, and the Equalizer. And basically something happened where somebody thought... Billy Jack, you know, there's the whole thing where it's like, hey, you hit me by accident, but I think you did it for real, so now I'm going to be... Now I'm just going to overreact to it. And actually, I think I've talked about this on the show before, but I did watch this. There was a Portland wrestling video that I did watch on YouTube at some point where this happens, and then he goes up to like the announcer bounce booth because they had like a nest where they would do the live announcing for the show. And Billy Jack goes up and he starts cutting a promo on the audience and talk about how everybody sucks. And you know, everybody's like, Jesus Christ, Billy Jack, get a hold of yourself. And he's like, F, you know, screw this, screw that. And I think at one point, if I recall correctly, he took off his trunks because they had Oregon on them. Because he used to wear those trunks that said Oregon on the back. And he just took them off. He was wearing, like, just smaller trunks underneath. But he just took those off, and he was just like, screw Oregon. And he throws his trunks.
Billy Jack Haynes. No, say it ain't so. I can't imagine him saying screw Oregon. That was his whole thing. It was just, I'm from Oregon. That was his whole gimmick.
What else is there if Billy Jack Haynes is not from Oregon?
I don't know.
he went from there to being a being Black Blood.
Yeah.
Which I liked Black Blood.
Black Blood was a cool gimmick, but it wasn't like it was a Billy Jack Haynes metamorphosis into Black Blood. He just showed up, he was Black Blood. And it was like, okay, that's just who he's going to be in this territory. Yeah. But it's funny, like when people tell me, hey, I'm from Oregon, the first thing that I think of is Billy Jack Haynes.
Yeah.
Anytime ever anyone mentions Oregon, I think of Billy Jack Haynes. So I'm gonna have to go on YouTube and find this clip.
You have to find it too, because I think you'll it's interesting. So now we got our superstar quote book. Nothing really interesting here other than Boogie Woogie Man. Him and Jerry Lawler are in the middle of a tiff. This is when Boogie Woogie Man got the tattoo across his forehead of a looks like a tail. The end of a tail. I don't know what the frick he's got on his head.
It's definitely nothing to do with boogieing, woogieing.
No, it definitely
sure.
is not.
Look at this Scotty the Body. Look at this young man.
Look at the very young Raven, who actually just appeared as a guest on my wrestling pod. I'm like, not my wrestling podcast.
The comic book
comic. The comic book
pod. The one that you heard the promo for.
I could talk kayfabe.
No, that's this one.
Why am I mixing this up?
Worst collection ever.
Thank you.
On iTunes and Stitcher.
Yeah.
Go check it out. Raven was on that. When you guys had Raven on, did he come to the apartment? How did that work?
He was on Skype. We called.
Oh, you did on Skype.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, he was not in town.
Oh, I thought like he flew out here and you guys put him in the guest room with Tully and Leela.
Yes, Raven and my cats got to live. He was on our show. We're very grateful that he was a part of this. Very young Scotty the Body here. Man, he looks like even younger than I've seen other pictures of him. Like, I feel like this is like the youngest picture, like this first ever.
It looks like another person. Like
it, literally, yeah.
It looks like a photo from like 1960, and like this kind of looks like Scotty the Body. Let's just put it up there and say it's him.
Yeah, but he's talking about how great he is in PNW. Speaking of Portland, so he's off to talk about the time I guess him and Billy Jack Haynes. I think they fought or they were going to fight because. There was a rib that somebody said that he did, that Scotty did, but he didn't do it, and Billy Jack was pissed. But instead of arguing, he was just like, well, I guess I'm just going to get my ass kicked by Billy Jack Haynes. Mm-hmm. I think eventually they settled it. But, we got the Kerry Von Erich talk. He's feuding with John Tatum. They're having issues. So
Very regional magazine.
Yeah, which is fine.
I like it.
Yeah.
Know Your Holds, Fireman Carry Takedown. This is Mike Rotundo explaining how to do the Fireman Carry.
And there's a nice photo of him doing a Fireman Carry Takedown to Brian Pillman. Yeah. And yeah. He's got his varsity club gear on.
I like this picture here. He's kind of looking off to the other picture. He's like, yeah, on the opposite page. He's like, I'm doing a good Fireman Carry. He cannot be trusted, by the way.
No, you can't trust him.
Can't trust him. So here we go. Superstar Dream Match. I can't remember. I read this, but I don't really remember how this comes to be. Because there's something going on here with a commissioner of professional wrestling being appointed.
Oh.
Kind of like I think we've talked about before on other shows, where why is there not a government body that regulates pro wrestling and allows, like, retired wrestlers to wrestle in certain state, or just something where, you know, you kind of, it's kind of like a veterans society.
I guess every state has their athletic commission and they regulate the wrestling in that state. So I guess there'll never be a governing body.
Mm.
Yeah, because it's a state by state basis.
Oh, it's like so basically it's like marijuana.
Yeah.
I love that. So I guess they decided, I think the gist of this is that they decided to, Ted Turner and Vince and apparently U.S. Senator Bill Bradley decided to all get together and put together this commission. You know, there's going to be a big battle royal. I think I'm seeing here as a big battle royal where all the big name wrestlers are going to be in.
I love this because they're treating this like it's a real sport.
Well, yeah.
Like it's and it's like, yeah, no. I love it.
Apparently, this dream match also somehow involves Kokina Maximus.
Yokozuna.
Right.
With long hair. Look at that long, beautiful hair he has.
Well, where's that?
I guess he always had long hair anyway. He just put it in a bun when he was Yokozuna.
But apparently, it's on the video. There's on the network. There's on the Hidden Gems where it's him against Slaughter in AWA. But then if you watch it past that match, there's his dark match tryout that he does for WWF back in like 1990.
Oh, okay.
Like that, or 91. And it's like him against, I forgot who it is, but I mean, he looks like this.
Yeah.
You know, but he wins with like a splash, and it's so there's something about watching a dark match with no commentary from like that era, cause just like hearing the ring smash.
Yeah.
It's very satisfying. It's like when you're at a live event and you can't hear the commentary and there's nothing else going on, but you just watch dudes jump and fucking land on the mat. And it's a great experience. I don't know. It kind of takes me back. Kind of immerses me.
It's funny. Cause like I'm looking at this guy here, Kokina Maximus, his photo. And I'm thinking to myself, how the heck did they think, hey, let's dress him up like a sumo wrestler? But it worked because he looked great as a sumo wrestler too. So
apparently, according to this article, so they're doing this tournament or whatever they're doing for all the wrestling main eventers, and there's the prospect of a Kokina Maximus Hulk Hogan match would be is mentioned.
Well, we got to see that match twice.
We sure did.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan. I still can't believe that was a thing that happened at King of the Ring.
Yeah,
like I still can't believe that was like the best finish they can come up with, is to have a random photographer that looked like Jerry Garcia in tie dye shoot fire at Hulk Hogan, and then from his camera, and then that's how he wins the title back. That's how Yokozuna wins the title. It was such a random ass thing.
But it happened, and it's in the lure of wrestling forever now.
It sure is.
Yeah.
Superstar interview woman. I don't know what she has to say.
Yeah, she's there she is with Doom. There she is
slapping Lex Luger.
Slap Lex Luger. She's taunting somebody in the corner there. Yeah, she's being a woman. Woman being woman. R.I.P. woman.
R.I.P. woman. Here, check this out. Weighing in at ? Buddy Rose, the career that could have been.
Yeah, and it's so it says weighing in at 217 slashed out, 239 slashed out, 268 slashed out, 294, etc. And it's just talking about how he's become fat.
Check out the sweet burn here. Rose let himself go so badly. Dusty Rhodes looks like Kendall Windham compared to him.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good good analysis. Not that Dusty Rhodes looks like Kendall Windham, but Playboy Buddy Rose really let himself go by 1990. It was bad. Like, yeah, I remember the blowaway diet. That was pretty funny, but it's pretty bad.
I don't know how that was supposed to get somebody like him over, because it wasn't like you see that and then you'd be like, oh man, that guy's going to beat Hulk Hogan.
He was just a jobber anyway, so they kind of...
He was never near anything,
though. Yeah.
I feel like he, you know, the gimmick was you figured at least he might have a few more high-profile matches, like something... Like, I think he had like one Saturday night's main event. I think it was against him and Texas Tornado. But he never had like any like big pay-per-view matches. Like he didn't even make a Survivor Series team.
No, he sure didn't.
You could just put him out there eating a sandwich, gets flying burritoed by Tito, and then he's eliminated. That's an easy elimination.
Right, that is a clever gimmick where he could just be like the gimmick they were trying to do with him, where he was just this fat slob, but then he was coming out like, I weigh 200 pounds or whatever. And yeah, that was there he's getting flying burritoed by Texas Tornado or by Tito Santana.
Yeah, there is Tito Santana.
Him, yeah.
Because he would basically just wrestle like Tito and a bunch of other schmucks. And
yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, he
I mean, I don't know. Like I know he was a big name, but like just look at him for crying out loud by 1990. He looked terrible.
As for Rose, well, his daily itinerary reads most likely something like this: breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, snack, pre-match snack, lose to Coco Beware, post-match snack, late supper, midnight sack.
It's funny that, like, so they just assume that he eats all this food because he got really fat. It's like, no, he probably just eats the wrong food, and that's why he got fat. But,
yeah.
But, I mean, you know, whatever. But he's dead now, so it doesn't matter. R.I.P. Buddy Rose.
R.I.P. Buddy Rose. Okay.
But he was on WrestleMania 1. He was the executioner.
That's right. He did. That's right. You know what? Yeah. He did make himself. He was on a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I should have been more cognizant of that, because... Yeah, I know why they had that match, because basically Tito just came back from knee surgery and was like, they wanted something for Tito to do. But like, why do they have to get Buddy? Didn't they have like a mid-level heel jobber to throw in there? I mean, in 85, I mean, couldn't you say, like, say, I mean, fuck, Jerry Valiant. You can do...
Really? Was Steve Lombardi there yet?
Yeah, he was still there.
Yeah, he could have been on the WrestleMania card.
He was kind of a name when he first started. Hell,
like, even Sal Bellamo. I guess Sal Bellamo was probably a face, really.
Yeah, he was probably a face then. But, I mean, you could have used... I mean, you could have thrown somebody in there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's WrestleMania. I mean, you're... Fuck, put Ron Shaw in there. Remember Big Ron Shaw?
Not really.
All right. So beware of these wrestling men. There's a thin line between fan favorites and rule breakers. A very thin line.
The Hart Foundation?
The Hart Foundation you cannot trust. Well, I mean, they just, you know, I kind of was tuned out of wrestling as intensely when they turned face.
Yeah.
Because it kind of, for me, it was like Hart Foundation were heels at WrestleMania 3, then Bret Hart and Bad News Brown did their thing at WrestleMania 4, and then WrestleMania 7 happened.
Oh, okay.
And they were faces.
Yeah.
But like everything in between that, like, I don't really remember. I mean, I remember watching these. I did watch these pay per views, but I don't remember like
it was. They had like a double turn with the Rougeau brothers, where they Rougeaus turned heel and they turned face, and then they feuded with them. And then for whatever reason, WrestleMania 5, they wrestled the Honky Tonk Man and Greg Valentine.
Right.
So that didn't make sense either. Like, they were feuding with the Rougeaus that year. Why did they wrestle Honky Tonk Man and Greg Valentine?
Where it's...
At WrestleMania.
It's...
Because the Rougeaus were in... They were there still. I mean, yeah, they had...
The Rougeaus wrestle?
That's another question.
Did they?
I think they wrestled the Bushwhackers. No, that was at the Royal Rumble.
No, they wrestled the Bushwhackers.
At WrestleMania 5?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was...
They must have moved on to a feud with the Bushwhackers, because, yeah, by the Royal Rumble, they were wrestling the Bushwhackers in a six-man tag.
Right.
Yeah. I don't remember the. I guess the. I guess
it was late. It was late 88.
Yeah, that was
transition happened.
Yeah, the SummerSlam must have been the payoff match for that feud with the Hart Foundation and the Rougeaus.
They didn't wrestle at SummerSlam 88 though.
Yeah, SummerSlam 88. It was the Rougeaus and the Harts.
Was it?
Yeah.
Are we sure it wasn't the Rougeaus and the British Bulldogs?
No, that was Survivor Series.
I think you're wrong.
I think I'm right.
I think you're wrong. So let's talk. Well, how about this? You talk about these wrestling beware things. I'm going to find out.
Yeah. So wrestling beware. There's a thin line between fan favorites and rule breakers. A very thin line. And we have a hodgepodge of heels and faces in 1990. Because you see the Big Boss Man. You see Jake Roberts. They are faces. The Rock and Roll Express. The Hearts. Then who's that? John Nord is the Lumberjack.
Yeah. It's UConn John.
UConn John
just came back.
So all right, it talks a little bit about Lex Luger. During his rookie year in Florida, Lex Luger made several swings at between fan favorite and rule breaker. So they're just saying, okay, because he was a rule breaker and a fan favorite, you can't trust him. Same with Jake Roberts as a rule breaker against Scott McGee, bottom left, or as a fan favorite, wrapping his snake around Rick Rude. Jake Roberts has made a career out of confusing his followers. So basically, what this article is saying is if they were at one time ever a rule breaker, even though they're a fan favorite now, you shouldn't trust them.
Right. Which is not, you know, I mean, there's some people you can't trust and there's some people you can.
And we have a nice centerfold of Norman the Lunatic.
Ooh, RP, Norman the Lunatic.
And this is the best centerfold ever.
Shout out to Mike Shaw.
Yeah.
So, okay. And I was correct, by the way. British Bulldogs and the Rougeaus fought in a time limit draw.
Oh. SummerSlam?
At SummerSlam 88.
Oh, okay.
But it was at Survivor Series that year. It was in between SummerSlam and Survivor Series that they had that incident.
Okay.
Where the Rougeaus knocked out Dynamite's teeth.
Good.
So that's why they got eliminated like first so they can get the fuck out of that match because they were in the same match together. But the Hart Foundation wrestled Demolition for the titles. But I think it was something where during that
match. That's right, yeah.
It was during that match that Jimmy Hart would come out and be like, hey, baby, I'm here with you. And that really didn't, you know, they were like, oh, no, you're not here with us. And I think there was some drama in that match that caused them to lose. So real quick, so the Rock and Roll Express, I want to talk about them being heels. Because we actually have a rare picture here. And is this something you don't see very often at all, if at all? You know that this is a heel Ricky Morton because look at that beard.
Yeah, he's got a beard.
You never see Ricky Morton with a beard. He is a baby face to this day.
Yeah, they're wrestling each other.
They are wrestling, yeah, because they did feud with each other.
Yeah, and they both had the Rock and Roll Express outfits on.
Ah, man. You think one of them would actually change it, but they insisted on keeping those.
It was like when Strikeforce broke up. Tito Santana kept wearing those Strikeforce trunks, but Rick Martel was like, nah, I'm going to be a model now, so screw this.
It's like, yeah, I know. I'm just going to get some purple trunks.
Yeah.
I'm cool.
Yeah. Yeah, Tito, you can wear those trunks for a couple more years. That's cool, but
Eventually, he settled on the Mexican hat on his trunks.
Well, no, that was always on the Strikeforce trunks,
wasn't it?
Didn't he have the hat? And no, he moved. Yeah, you're right.
He's like, you know what? Time to move on.
They had the lightning bolts, and he had the Mexican flag, and Rick Martel had the lightning bolt with the Canadian flag.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the Rock and Roll Express were fighting each other, and apparently they had some turmoil, so you cannot trust them. You know, this is a rough time for the Rock and Rolls, you know, because they went from like being like super, you know, over in their heyday in like 87, you know, probably, you know, going into 88 to kind of just not being really anything up until like 90, you know, 1990 in the summer, because that's when, you know, they came back to NWA. But it was a weird time for them. So I guess we're judging them based on that. John Nord, he used to be Northern Barbarian. And now he is UConn John Nord because he's very into the Bible, if you remember. You remember that?
You know, I didn't really pay attention to AWA back then.
Well, so. How could you?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't available, really.
Yeah.
So
wasn't it on ESPN?
Was it? Well, that's a good question. Was it on ESPN up to the very end?
I don't know. I remember seeing John Nord as the UConn John on the ESPN Classic replays years later.
Yeah, that's true. He was. Yeah. So maybe it did make it to them.
And I have ESPN Classic now, and they don't show it.
No, yeah, they're done with it. You got to find it somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm good.
they should just put it on the friggin' network, man. Or do they have the rights to that?
They have the rights to to AWA, but I don't know if they have the rights to the ESPN show. So I don't know. But they have Wrestle Rock.
Well, they kind of pick and choose and put certain episodes up there. Like, there's a smattering of episodes that feature Shawn Michaels. But I'm waiting for them to add more because I really want to watch them. But Heart Foundation, Eric Embry. Eric Embry was... he was basically same deal. He was a heel, and then he became like this big fan favorite in Texas. And then, he was like the Roman Reigns of World Class Championship Wrestling back in like 89, 90. And then eventually he went away, or he changed, became like a heel again, which I always remember because when I was really reading wrestling magazines around like 1991, he was like the biggest heel in USWA. So, aftermath of Hulk Hogan, where does he go from WrestleMania 7? I do like this casual photo of Terry standing there, kind of looks like he's answering a question.
I'm a big fan of t-shirts with the drawing of the wrestler wearing another one of their t-shirts.
And this one's autographed, too.
Yeah.
Look at that.
I'm a big fan of that. So Hulk has that red t-shirt on with him wearing the Hulk Rules shirt on. And I love that.
This is Hulk Hogan Inception.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest.
The Rockers had a shirt where it was like a purple shirt with the Rockers wearing purple shirts. But then it stopped. Whereas I wanted it to keep going. I wanted the purple shirt to have more Rockers, and then those Rockers be wearing a purple shirt, and just doing it as long as the print can print it. But sadly, that was never how they were made.
So the idea is that Hulk Hogan's going to be become a movie star.
Yeah,
that's where he's headed.
So he's going to go make Mr. Nanny.
That's right.
Basically,
or
was it Suburban Commando?
He was on his way to make Suburban Commando, I think, at this point. And then Mr. Nanny was done, I think, sometime when he was off.
Yeah, I think that was
92 and 93.
Was that after WrestleMania 8?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was when I remember renting Mr. Nanny. And
I definitely rented Suburban Commando, but I don't think I ever got around to renting Mr. Nanny.
Mr. Nanny had other wrestlers make a cameo in it. Like, there's the beginning, because he's a wrestler in that movie, mm-hmm. and then he becomes a nanny. And the opening scene of the movie, he's like wrestling like a gauntlet match against like Brutus Beefcake, Kamala, I think Bill Eadie's in there.
Bill Eadie made quite a few appearances in Hulk Hogan films.
Yeah,
because he's also in No Holds Barred. He's the what's his name? It's like Jake something. He basically is like, it's Bill Eadie with like dark guy line on his eye.
Oh.
And like glitter, and he's just wearing trunks.
I haven't watched No Holds Barred probably since it came out on video.
Yeah, so basically, if you're ranking the promotion that Hulk Hogan wrestled in, Battle of the Tough Guys, or whatever the fuck it was called, it went Rip. What was his last name in there? Rip.
He had a last name?
Did he?
I don't know. I thought it was just Rip. Rip. Okay. Rip M.
Rip. Rip M.
Rip M.
Zeus and Bill Eadie. That's your top three.
Yeah,
that's a triple threat match for the ages, guys. If there was a nostalgic wrestling promotion or like a convention that was doing something, you want my dollars, book that three way match at your events. You can pay him. I mean, Hogan will do it if you pay him.
I don't know if he'll work the match, but he'll show up.
You can just get Zeus and them just to walk up to him, and you can just punch him. They could bump.
I think Bill Eadie's the only one who's going to be doing any bumps.
Bill Eadie still, I think, still does.
Yeah. Yeah, he still does. Him and Barry Darso work. Actually, I think Barry Darso just recently retired. I think Bill Eadie just does it on his own now.
Yeah, Axis the Demolisher.
Yeah.
So
I remember BCW had a wrestler named Texas Outlaw. And I went to a show in Rochester, and he was talking to me. He's like, oh, man, I just worked Axe of Demolition last week. I think it was, like, in Syracuse. And he's like, oh, he kept drilling me with the chair. And he was legit, like, drilling him with the chair. And he was like, you want another one? And he'd be like, no. But the fans were like, yeah. And he drilled him, like, three times. And he was really sore. And he showed me the bruise on his back.
Yikes.
From Bill Eadie hitting him with a chair.
That superstar, man. Shout out to Bill Eadie.
Yeah.
Sting story here. I can't find happiness in Arn Anderson's pain. So.
But and there's a shot of Sting in crutches.
Yeah.
So what happened to Arn Anderson? Why is he in pain?
I don't know, because this is when they turned on him.
Who turned on? They turned on Sting.
They turned on Sting.
So why is Arn Anderson in pain?
I don't know.
He has a back injury. That's what it says.
If you're asking me, I'm happy. Wait, so what happened to Arn? Back on the two Andersons and Flair dealt Sting a career-threatening industry immediately after blah, blah, blah. Surgery was successful, but Sting was out of commission, blah, blah, blah. So Sting sat on the sidelines and plotted his revenge. He figured out a way to win the title from Flair. He figured out a way to teach Ole and Arn Anderson a lesson. Then Arn went ahead and busted up his back.
Oh.
So
he doesn't feel bad.
This is a very thin premise for a story. I'm just gonna say that much. It's like Arn Anderson got injured and Sting's injured, so let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, I think we could just jump to our
let's jump to our ratings here.
Let's get to our ratings,
because the rest of this is all continue of yes. previous articles.
Oh, we'll see here. Who won the match here? This dream match.
Oh yeah, we never got to the thrilling conclusion. Who's the dream match?
So let's see here. Flair flipped and fell over. The champ wearily rose. A five currently pounds to say Hulk Hogan was there.
Of course, Hulk Hogan would be there.
It was Flair. Warrior won by count out.
Oh.
So.
Go Warrior.
Good job.
It was a contract with ABC, it said?
Wait,
oh. In the aftermath.
So the international tournament had no ill effect on individual federations' business during the course of the year. Both the WWF WrestleMania and NWA Starrcade broke previous attendance records and pay-per-view records. Ted Turner had shrewdly persuaded the federation owners to sign a single-year contract with ABC, thus opening next year's tournament for competitive bids. With ratings for the roof, the networks a day after the tournament final had already tendered Super Bowl-sized contracts to the owners, as Turner had forecast pro wrestling had made its permanent mark. So apparently, this was just all a ruse for pro wrestling to become on mainstream TV.
It was already on mainstream TV.
Yeah, so what are we doing? It's pointless.
Yeah.
All right, wrestling superstar ratings here. This is for up till the April 20th of 1990. So this is right after WrestleMania 6. And let's see, our top 10. Let's just give our top 10. Ric Flair, world champion, Ultimate Warrior, heavyweight champion, WWF. Hogan, Luger, Lawler, Rick Rude, Larry Zbysko, who's a new AWA champion, I think. Kurt Hennig, Kerry Von Erich, and Bill Dundee. So there you go.
That's your top 10. Bill Dundee, number 10.
I'm just looking at here the NWA ratings. You have Norman at number 2. That's pretty impressive.
Was he the television champ? Why no. was he so high?
Who was television champion this time? This was it Muda? No, wait, because it had been was Muda, went Muda.
That is so weird.
It went Muda to Anderson, and then Anderson lost it to Tom Zink. But that doesn't.
I think yet. maybe it was vacant.
It could have been,
because if you look at WWF, look who's number one. Rude's won.
But he wasn't.
He wasn't IC champ. There was Warrior won the world title, and then they held up the IC title. Mm. So I think the IC title was vacant when this rating was made. I'm assuming the television title must have been vacant as well, hence Norman being number 2. It's the only thing I can think of.
Norman's number two, Mike Rotundo number three, Pillman four, Sullivan five, Kevin Sullivan five, Tommy Rich number six, Samoan Savage number seven. So Samu and Fatu ain't shit, but Samoan Savage is up there. You got even above Cactus Jack, Abdullah the Butcher, and the Bam Bam Bigelow. So that's it. That's an interesting ratings right there.
For, yeah, Norman being number two, he shouldn't be number two on any list.
I'm kind of curious. I'm like, was he that competitive? Because you mean you would have to be out there wrestling. Like,
he's not even number two in top dead wrestlers named Mike. who would be the number one dead wrestler named Mike?
Mike Awesome. I see who's number 10 in the USWA.
I would rank him higher than Norman, aka Mike Shaw.
I feel like we're missing another. What's another dead wrestler named Mike? I mean, Mike DiBiase, but he's a famous deceased wrestler.
Mike Graham.
Ooh, Mike Graham.
I would rank him above Norman.
Yeah, I think you pretty much rank everybody else above Norman. Yeah, PNW's got their title held up. You got Tony Atlas, the head champ of the ICW, or soon to be IWCCW, with Rochester Roadblock at number two in their ratings. And let's see what else we got here. We got Georgia All-Star Championship Wrestling, or just Georgia All-Star Wrestling.
Title's vacant. Mike Golden is number one.
Don't fuck with Mike Golden.
I rank him higher than Norman. I don't know who he is, but he's higher than Norman.
Let's hope he's alive.
Powerhouse Busick, number two.
He was Powerhouse Busick
before. Yeah. RIP, Big Bully Busick.
I also want to point out number eight in the Georgia ratings is Shotgun Gage. What kind of name is Shotgun Gage? Is his last name Gage? And he's just like, I'll just call myself Shotgun because that kind of...
I like number 10, just Big Daddy.
There's some names here in these gate ratings, that's what they call them. LPWA's got number one is Bad Girl. Just Bad Girl. So, and let's see, PWA. Number three is Beef Burton. I feel like Beef Burton would have been welcome into BCW.
Number four is Derek Dukes. So there you go. Lightning Kid's in there at number seven.
Also Jerry Lynn, number nine.
Yeah.
This is the Pro Wrestling America promotion that was kind of like it was kind of like AWA's like developmental, but it was like better than AWA because it wasn't run by Vern. Because
they had Ken Patera. He's number two.
Well, they had Charlie Norris, Ricky Rice, Ken Patera. You had Larry Cameron, RIP.
Oh, yeah. Charlie Norris is the champ.
Charlie Norris is the champ. And then you had PWF. You had some Florida wrestling.
Yeah, Robert Fuller, Steve Kern, The Terminator.
Buddy Landell's there. Somebody named the Coconut Kid. And then your World Wrestling Council, Harley Race hanging out in there.
All right, Harley. Doing a tour in Puerto Rico.
Must have told you about that when the guy, our buddy, who puts up all those... He's not our buddy, but he puts up all those World Wrestling Council videos. He put up like a bunch of these like anniversario shows from like each year from like 88, 89, 90. I don't know if they're still up. I haven't gotten to watch them yet, but I bet there's some goodness from these eras here. So that's pretty much it for this issue. Nothing. Do you have anything else you want to say about wrestling superstars?
It's interesting. Okay, so I never noticed this before. I just noticed this now as I'm looking at it. If you look at the UPC, on sale through August 6, 1990. So this has a throwaway date on the cover. I've never seen that before.
Really?
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, you know, I never see that very often myself.
Yeah, I've never noticed it. It might be on other magazines. So it's an August 90 date, which means it probably came out in like March or April. So yeah.
Cool.
That's Wrestling Superstars. Cost $2.50 in 1990.
That was a big deal to buy that. I wrestling magazines weren't cheap back in the day.
They're not cheap now.
They're not cheap now. I was at Fry's yesterday looking for Pro Wrestling Illustrated. They did not have it.
At Fry's?
At Fry's. They did not have it. They usually do. Oh, so.
The new version.
Yeah.
You got to go to like Top, or not Tops, but like
Ralph's. Yeah.
Ralph's.
But Fry's has had it. I've seen it. They just didn't have it yesterday. I went to the other rack. I mean, they had Retro Gamer magazine, which is what I'm a big fan of. I like that magazine. $14.99 they were asking for that magazine, and that was the price on the cover. It wasn't like the Fry's price. That was the actual price, $14.99. So I will not be buying Retro Gamer magazine.
That sucks because that sounds like a good magazine.
It's a great magazine. I've bought in past issues, and it was only $9.99. And even then, that's still cheap. That's still steep. But I thought $9.99. Okay, whatever. It's just one magazine. They raised the price to $14.99. The hell with that. So I just sat there and I read it.
Yeah, that's how you gotta do it now.
And I was like, I'm not buying this. Because I bought a game for $17.99. So like, why am I gonna buy a magazine for $15?
Eat my ass.
Yeah. Right. But anyway, go to my Twitter, Sweatpants Joe. I'm on Instagram as well. I'm also on Instagram at Sweatpants Joe Eats. It's also my YouTube channel. Check it out if you haven't yet. I'm eating a lot of cool food.
Yep, and you can check me out on Worst Collection Ever with myself and my wife, Jen, doing comic book podcasts, Sting stuff. That's every week. And, of course, myself on Twitter and Instagram at Angry Hero Sean. So check me out there. So who we want to do this week? I'm looking at Cactus Jack. Have we done Cactus Jack?
Bang, bang!